Welcome to Psychic Elephant Radio. Tonight's feature of Only the Monsters is Chapter 2, The Factory. Please enjoy. David and Melissa walk into the administrative building and up the stairs to see Judith.
Good morning. Are you excited for your trip?
Yes. I can't wait to get on the road and explore this country. I have been waiting centuries for this.
David grabs the papers from Judith.
Are you kidding me? The first stop is Brooklyn. Looks like we're going to get to explore the five boroughs.
You need to go there first anyway with all your gear. That's where you'll get your transport. Oh, and David, have fun.
Judith gives a smile to David as he smiles back, and they walk out the door.
Welp, we have to start somewhere. Nice day for a walk, right?
David sighs and pulls up his hood.
We're off to see the wizard.
The wonderful wizard of... Oh, not gonna lie, you look super badass with that samurai sword on your back.
It's because I am a badass.
Sure you are, Charles Dickens.
The path through Long Island is pretty straightforward. With only 1,000 people, there is really only a need for one road. It is worn but travelled frequently. The scenery is beautiful. It is amazing what can happen when humans are not overusing the world. As they arrive at the Synth Blood Factory's gate, the guards look them up and down.
Can we help you?
Oh my god, it's David Owens.
David flashes his ID card like he's a celebrity.
We are here for the Archives Project.
Oh, of course. No need for the ID. I'm a big fan.
Melissa rolls her eyes and giggles to herself. David looks at the guard's name tag as he escorts them into the facility.
Rodriguez, we are also picking up our transport. Would you know anything about that?
Sorry, sir. You'll have to go to fabrication for that. It's next door.
Okay, thanks.
Looks like the first name here is Donald Bell, a foreman on the synth lines.
Yes. His office is right up here.
Melissa knocks on the door.
Come on in.
Melissa and David thank the guard with a nod and head into the office. Behind the oversized desk sits the slender-built Donald Bell, a blue-collar, working man's vampire, with a blood-stained apron over his slightly less blood-stained collared shirt.
You must be the archive people? I got a message earlier. I figure we talk in here. Whole lot quieter than out in the factory.
Well, we appreciate your time.
And this voice recorder appreciates it, too.
Melissa sets up the recorder on Donald's desk and points the mic towards him.
So, Donald, what we are looking for here are your experiences after the fall, and basically what led you to the life you have now.
You can use your normal speaking voice. You may begin when you're ready.
Start at the beginning?
Yes.
Well, when the last of the humans died, and their rioting and looting and blowing shit up finally stopped...
Donald stops abruptly and embarrassingly asks as he blushes slightly.
Is it okay if I swear?
David laughs and nods in approval to Donald.
Okay, so after the humans blew up a bunch of shit and they were gone, it became a different kind of crazy, you know, such a weird feeling. I was friends with some other Strigoi, and since none of us ever got sick, it was pretty easy to link up with more. There were about 20 of us. We raided a bunch of blood banks and headed for the woods. Out there was less damage, less fires, and less bodies rotting away. We found some abandoned cabins and set up there. We were lost, man, not sure what to do next. Half of us wanted to head out and find more of our kind. Half wanted to stay, hoping they'd find us. So, that's what happened. About a dozen took some blood bags and headed out to look for others. I stayed along with about 7 or 8 others. I knew of some more hospitals and blood banks nearby, so we'd be okay for a while. It felt kind of like a lose-lose situation, you know. We raided nearby towns for supplies, looking for others like us. This went on for a while, felt like years, but was probably months. Who knows? Plus, my memory might be a bit foggy. It was a long time ago.
Of course. Just try to recall everything to the best of your abilities.
Our blood supply was dwindling, and we were rationing what we had. It made everything more difficult. We got tired quickly, needed more sleep, and took longer to recover. Hell, It was like being human again. It was bad, especially if we had any run-ins with groups who felt like they, well, let's say, were entitled to the supplies and were not up for negotiating.
The Mistaken?
Donald nods and gives a look of fear, thinking back on his memories.
They say, after you've turned, you're just an amplified version of yourself. All the good stuff, but all the bad stuff, too. Some people were made up of nothing but the bad stuff. Monsters. Long before they became monsters. I figure a lot of them got turned right before the fall, in all the confusion and chaos. But, anyway, the one day we were sitting near the fire and heard some rustling about 40 yards out. Figured it was either a black bear or a moose. No grizzlies in upstate New York. So, we shrugged it off.
Melissa sits up straight in her seat, grabs the desk with excitement and interrupts.
A Sasquatch?
David laughs and puts his hands over his face.
No. Fortunately for us. If there was one, we wouldn't have stood a chance in our weakened states.
Melissa sits back in her seat and sighs slightly.
It was a small pack of shapeshifters, about 5 or 6. Werewolves, I believe.
Melissa perks back up.
They stayed with us for a few years, I think. Ripped apart a group of Mistaken that tried to attack us. Needless to say, no one bothered us again. Small packs like that are usually elders, really powerful. They hunted and gave us the blood from their kills. Animal blood is better than no blood, but it barely kept us alive. After a while, they headed west to find more of their kind. They taught us how to hunt and drain the blood properly. Told us to feed the wild dogs, wolves, and bears the meat. So that's how we lived for years, drinking disgusting animal blood that barely kept us alive and sleeping 12 or 15 hours a day, feeling like a beat-up human all the time, wondering if we could even go on like this.
I'm a solid 3-hour night guy myself.
Right? So, after a few months or years of this, one night, some extremely healthy-looking recruiters came up to our cabins. They were talking to us about a high council and synthetic blood and a new world. All kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, anything sounded better than living in the woods drinking deer blood. They offered us some synth, and it was like, you know, heavenly. We were back to our old selves immediately. So, that was it, man. We were in. If we could live off an endless supply of this stuff, yeah, we were in. For the first, I don't know how many years, it was all cleaning up and rebuilding. It was the first time I saw them 3D print these massive sections of buildings. It was wild. The recruiters kept bringing in more and more Strigoi. The synth factories quickly became a priority. Actually, you're sitting in one of the very first factories.
David sits back in his seat, unenthused.
Ah, neat.
Melissa hides her laughter.
The second the solar panels were on the roof, we started mass production. And I tell you what.
The quiet of the interview room was interrupted by the cut-in of the intercom system.
Bell, we need you down on the floor to Station 17. There is a problem with the coagulator.
Donald, is there anything else you want to say before you fly off?
I just want to say how grateful I am to the High Council. What they have done for us has been amazing. They truly have saved us.
Donald runs out the door to the factory floor. David and Melissa walk out of the room and find Rodriguez outside of the room.
Oh, you're still here?
Yes. For security purposes, I will be showing you around. The next stop is with Dr. Evelyn Jones. Her office is right down this corridor.
As they walk down the corridor, David and Melissa look down towards the factory floor. It looks like a normal factory. Lots of pipes and yellow safety barriers. Nothing too exciting, but everything is extremely vital in the same point.
Hello, nice to meet you. Please come in. I have lots of work to do. We need to make this quick.
The office walls are covered with whiteboards. Formulas are written and crossed out on most of them. One corner of the bright white room has a mini laboratory with beakers bubbling and smoking a little. There is a centrifuge with what looks like blood in it, whirling away with some experiment. Her desk is large but clean, papers neatly stacked in piles. She grabs a few piles and puts them in her desk drawer. Melissa and David hurriedly take a seat.
Doctor, of course we will make this as quick as possible. We just need your testimony for the archives.
Dr. Evelyn starts shifting papers and opens a file and lays it on her desk.
Okay. I have worked in a lab all my life. I am an expert phlebotomist. I started working on a synth blood formula and perfected it with my team in 39.
David cuts in abruptly.
You mean 49?
Please, Doctor. We need your full attention. The High Council needs this archive to be correct.
Dr. Evelyn sits up in her chair and turns her focus to them.
Yes, sorry. I realize the importance of this.
Thank you for being succinct. But let's just start over with what happened from the fall.
Sure, of course. I have lived in Manhattan all my life. My parents were very well off, so I was able to go to prestigious schools and study anything I wanted. I was turned in my college years at a party and figured studying blood would be the most logical. I wasn't super excited about feeding off of humans. During my career, I kept up with the phlebotomy to keep my food supply going. During the fall, as the humans started to die, I knew something just wasn't right. I started to hoard blood from the laboratory that I was working at. I was also stealing equipment as well. I was trying to figure out what was causing the humans to die. I studied the plague and hoarded as much blood as I could, just in case I couldn't find a cure.
Is that where you first came up with the idea of synthetic blood?
That was all the High Council. The recruiters discovered my work and came to me in late 2048. I was barricaded in my apartment at that point. The unrest outside made it difficult to leave. One evening, all I heard was the echo in the hallways with someone pounding on the door, screaming my name. The recruiters had arrived for me. They brought me to the council building to help them with their formula. I didn't even know what had happened in the world. The humans were almost completely gone. Afterwards, I learned that I was recruit number 4.
Wow, that is amazing.
My handlers from the council sat me and 3 other scientists down and explained to us that our work would be life-changing to preserve our vampiric ways. I was all in as soon as they told me. We were working 7 days a week, 22-hour days perfecting what keeps us all alive today. It was such gratifying work. We saved everyone.
Dr. Evelyn sits back in her chair and smiles, thinking of the past.
Within a year, we were perfecting small batches of synth blood. The bulk of the synth was sent to the High Council to keep them alive and to provide more to the recruiters to keep them going. We had to get more and more scientists and integral people to keep this new world going. My work continues to make more stable strains and longer shelf life for the synth.
That is an amazing story. Were you a part of the higher quality strains?
No, that is not my department. I am working on ways to preserve and extend shelf life. We are always trying to keep the formula ever-changing and helping to continue our legacy.
Thank you for your time. We don't want to keep you any longer.
They walk out of the doctor's office and meet Rodriguez again.
Okay, now point us to the fabrication building, please.
Right this way, sir.
David and Melissa walk into the fabrication building and stop at the front desk. There is a secretary behind the desk with what looks like a mechanic, covered in dirt and grime, talking to her.
Hello, my name is Mitch. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. We are here to pick up our transport vehicle. You know, the one with all the bells and whistles.
And don't forget the comfy sleeping quarters.
Yes, of course, we loaded it up for you. Please come this way to the vehicle.
The vehicle is waiting for them in the bay of the garage. Mitch's partner, Mary, the real brains behind the operation, comes out and starts explaining to them what they are getting.
Here you have a military spec. Gen 2 defense mode with sleeping quarters. This all-terrain vehicle will be no match for any obstacle you come to. We have airless tires with armor plating on every inch of this beauty. We also have 4 state-of-the-art 8RZ solar panels to give you maximum distance between charges. If you look inside here, you will see the modes and options available.
What's that big red button?
That's the oh shit button. It will probably be the most important. It will completely seal the vehicle and cover every bulletproof window with armor plating as well. There are also many options for rollovers, mechanical issues, and power shortages. All of the options in the system will be easy to understand when you need them. The main tablet on the dashboard will also lead your way with the built-in mapping technology.
This is awesome.
Melissa rolls her eyes.
I will be right back. I need to upload the first interviews to the OmniWeb.
So, do 3D buildings use the same technology as the vehicles?
Yes, it is very similar. We use recycled materials for the machines that print and stamp out the items. It all holds up very well and is extremely durable. Obviously, it is not completely perfect, so that is why we have to add the armor plating as necessary. But the buildings are extremely sturdy. It really is amazing what you can create when money isn't really limiting you.
Yeah, that is one thing that the High Council got right, not relying on greed.
Melissa is standing over at the OmniWeb machine, looking at them talking around their transport. She boots up the OmniWeb machine and opens her emails. She connects the voice recorder and emails it to Judith. Glancing at her other emails, nothing really excites her except for one message with no subject line. She thinks to herself how weird that is, but quickly shrugs it off over the excitement of her assignment. Agatha gives a series of coordinates ending in Vermont, the birthplace of the OmniWeb. Melissa heads back to the transport and opens the passenger side door and is surprised to see David.
I don't know how to drive.
Really?
I'm from New York. I never needed to.
Melissa glares at David.
Fine, I'll drive.
Shotgun?
Buckle up, Buttercup. We're going to Vermont.
Oh, nice. The Green Mountain State. Birthplace of Calvin Coolidge, Chester A. Arthur, and the mighty OmniWeb. Which part? I love Vermont.
It's Newport.
David pulls an old map out of his bag and opens it, looking at their journey.
Oh, that's almost Canada.
With stops in Hartford, Springfield, Amherst, and Brattleboro.
David groans as he hides behind the map. Melissa laughs. David is pleased as they make great time with their interviews in Connecticut and Massachusetts, even if most of it sounded like a broken Robert Johnson record. David continues daydreaming about his next bestseller. Melissa hopes for some new adventures as they both begin to settle into their new routine. David and Melissa finish their work in Brattleboro and are heading to the transport.
If I hear one more, the High Council saved me. They're the best. I'm going to puke.
To be honest, I'm only paying attention to about half of it.
Maybe Newport will be more interesting?
I think I might hate Vermont now.
As they enter rural Vermont, Melissa gets lost in her driving and thoughts, looking around and admiring how overgrown everything is, except for a few roads that are maintained for travel. She daydreams of what creatures lurk in the woods beyond the roads. She turns to David with excitement.
Wow, this is beautiful, don't you think? Oh my God, you're sleeping.
David had fallen asleep shortly after they departed, the map draped over him as a blanket.
Oh well, you're missing it.
Some time had passed on their journey, and with about an hour to go, Melissa decides to stop for a bit. She gets out to stretch her legs and grabs a drink. She wanders around outside the transport and listens to the wildlife. Crickets chirping, animals rustling in the leaves, the sounds filling the air, then complete silence. She pauses and looks around. The silence was frightening in the moonlight. After a minute, she begins to hear a low rumble, not unlike thunder. The ground begins to vibrate faintly. She starts walking towards the transport. The vibrations increase. The rumbling seems closer. Now it sounds more like a stampede, a thunderous stampede that was heading their way. A part of her wants to stay right there and see what is coming. After all, that's why she's there. But the sounds become deafening and the ground shaking like a mild earthquake. Melissa could barely stand up.
Damn it!
She stumbles and falls as she jumps back in the transport and slams the door. David finally jumps up from his slumber.
What the hell is going on?
I don't know.
The stampede is closing in, getting louder and louder.
This is insane.
Louder and louder the closer it gets.
Hit the oh shit button.
The what?
The giant red button near your left hand.
Melissa frantically hits the button, and the transport immediately activates safety mode. Metal plates fire up to cover all the glass, and metal skirting drops to the ground as the transport lowers its center of gravity. Harpoon-like stakes fire into the ground, anchoring the transport. David and Melissa peek out through tiny slots as the transport fires flares, illuminating the sky. Before they know it, the stampede is pummeling the transport, sharp clawing sounds and what sounds like heavy footsteps on the roof and hood. They can barely make out what is going on in the fading flare light. This continues for what seems like hours. Then, as fast as they came, they left. As the stampede fades into the distance, David turns to Melissa.
Well, I mean, you did want to see some monsters.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed tonight's episode. Tune in next week for Chapter 3, The Omniweb. If you liked what you heard, please consider giving us a good rating. Check out our Facebook page, Psychic Elephant Radio. For more content, please visit our Patreon. Opening theme song by Pygmy Moose. All content property of Psychic Elephant Radio.